88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
The last word on Today FM.
Now we're delighted to be joined by the super vet, Noel Fitzpatrick, and he has a great new book out called Dogs and Their Humans, the stories of healing and hope from the super vet's surgery. Noel Fitzpatrick, thank you very much for joining us. And I love the title of the book because it implies that the dogs are in control of their humans.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it. I wouldn't say control is the right word. I would say that they are a luminescent force inside our life, Matt. And I think that what I wanted to do was have a slight irony there, because I insisted in the TV show that we did not call families owners from 10 years ago when we started. And back then, everybody kind of laughed at that. And I said, no, we're going to call them mum and dad. So I think that society has now grown forward in the last decade or so. And so I call this book Dogs and Their Humans, because they really do reflect the best of us, I think.
Yeah, it does. If there's a good relationship between a dog and its human, or humans in the case of a family, does that make the humans better people?
Yes, it does. And I say that without reservation, because I have seen time and again, as is elucidated by the many stories in this book, which we shine a light on that relationship with those stories. I find that dogs provide us, number one, a safe place within which we can be ourselves, because they don't mind if you smell. In fact, they probably prefer if you do smell. My lovely Kira, who has now passed, used to lick the sweat off my face, and she would love it. So they allow us this safe space where we can be ourselves regardless. Secondly, dogs don't have priorities in terms of who they do and don't love. They don't care if you're the queen or if you're a rock star or if you're just me wandering around in your normal life. They really, really don't care. And I think that that's a great leveler. And I think that, and I've had numerous people say to me, you know, regardless of the vicissitudes of life, the challenges in life, when I come home to my dog, I can be myself. And so I think the essence of being human, wanting to be loved, feeling a sense of fulfillment and joy, is all brought out through that relationship. And so, yes, they do make us the best humans we can be.
Yeah, I'm going to probably be asking you questions which are not directly relevant to the book and which are informed by my own personal prejudices, because we got our first family dog 8 years ago. And I always say I wish we had done so many, many years earlier, because she's a great bond between everybody in the family. But is it that dogs, and I say this deliberately because I get the impression that, you know, that she'd almost have a scale amongst the seven of us in the house as to who she loves the most and who she loves the least. Is that the way dogs are, that they don't treat everybody in the family equally, that there are certain people who might get preference, which might tell you a little bit about those personalities?
And the flip side is also true, that a dog may indeed have a preference, as you said, it shows quite a lot about human beings. And the flip side is also true, in the sense that I've often had people come into my consulting room and they may be in a relationship, and the husband will say to me, well, the dog comes way higher than me, mate. But you are right. There's a story in the book, I think it's chapter 5, about Bertie the Pomeranian and a lady called Cynthia. And this Pomeranian had a really bad problem in his neck, next to his brain stem. And Bertie was going to die if we didn't treat him. There was a lot of risks associated with this surgery. And Bertie had suddenly fallen out of love with Cynthia. One day he was all over her and had been for years. The next day he hated her and was running away. And he had formed a friendship with Cynthia's new partner because she was going through a divorce. And Cynthia couldn't make out why he was friendly towards the new partner and not to her. Turned out she rolled over in the bed on him and hurt an already incipient condition in his neck. So he was now changing his allegiance. And when I told her all the risks of the surgery, I expected her to ask me questions about the surgery. The only question she asked me was, will he love me again? So you're right, dogs are very discerning. And I've listed many people from Winston Churchill through to the Queen who have had dogs in their lives, and all report that the dog reflected the best in them.
Yeah, but the dog's attitude towards you can change as you behave towards the dog, I suppose. Which brings me to a question again in relation to something that we've heard a lot about recently, that there's no such thing as a dangerous dog unless the human with whom it interacts the most perhaps makes it dangerous. Is that true? Because you do mention, I think in the book, some dogs which, if not unrestricted breeds, are those that many people might be nervous of.
So first, I need to have a disclaimer there. I'm a surgeon, so I don't know anything about behavior. I'm not a behaviorist. I'm not a generalist, and I'm not a medic. So,
but you know, dogs, you know, dogs.
Yeah. So my experience is that I've been around a lot of dogs. So without commenting on the specifics of legislation, I would say that I frequently see situations where dogs and their humans reflect each other. And dogs very much do respond to their environment in which they're brought up in terms of being nervous, in terms of being anxious. A lot of times people will come into my room and they'll say, oh, my dog has such and such a problem. And they'll come to me for surgery, of course, but the dog will be a nervous wreck. And I say to the people, well, you look like a nervous wreck. And the dog is just reflecting the environment that the dog has at home. And I've frequently seen rescue dogs that have been treated abominably that either turn into really, really timid dogs or quite aggressive dogs because of that environment. So you're right. Conditioning has a major influence on a canine behavior and on our interaction with that canine.
I suspect, though, Noel, you probably see the people who care most about dogs because they're the ones who are prepared to go to the expense and the trouble of seeking you out for an expensive operation to deal with a serious condition. Whereas those who may not love their dogs as much, and unfortunately we hear about it, abandon them into care or have them put down.
So I also see the latter category. I saw one yesterday, which was being abandoned and going to be put down. And we managed to rehome that dog. So I see all spectrum. I had two consults yesterday that were not surgical. The dog came in on both occasions and surgery was not appropriate. So what you don't see is the flip side of that coin, which is that many of the patients I see, we don't operate on. We give them some tablets or we give them advice and we say, look, it's not the right thing to do. So I can totally appreciate where you're coming from with the question, in the sense that the people who care the most should be the people that end up in my consulting room. But actually, because I get charitable organizations and because I get people down on their luck as well as up on their luck in my consulting room, I see the whole gamut, the full gamut of people who I think most people do care. Some people don't have the financial wherewithal to have an operation done. You're right. But at the end of the day, it's not enough to be able to do something. It needs to be the right thing to do for that dog and their family.
Noel, do you also though suffer from a perception that you can cure any problem and that
No.
everyone who comes to you thinks that they're going to get a miracle outcome?
No. So I can emphatically answer that because the television show reflects the most sensational cases. But for every one of those, there's 10 that I give some tablets to or that I put to sleep. I had the day before yesterday a very sad situation in a Chow Chow dog that had both knees, both hips, both elbows affected. And we put that dog to sleep. So no, I absolutely do not think that I can treat all dogs, nor should I, because it's not ethically the right thing to do.
Indeed. What do you think, though? I mean, and I know this gets back into the behavioural issue to an extent, and I know you're a surgeon, but given your love of dogs and the interaction with humans, what do you think of people who get a dog and then who just decide it's too much bother and they give up on the dog and give the dog away or the dog might end up being put down? What does that say about people?
Well, it's not for me to judge an individual situation, and the book is very much intended to reflect the light that dogs bring into our lives. And if I can reflect that light into a world torn apart by war and avarice and greed, then that's a really important thing. But I think that some people just underestimate the amount of care and devotion that a dog needs. Take myself, for example. I had a dog called Kira, a border terrier, in my life for 14 years, and she died a couple of years ago, but I've not had another dog in my life. And you might think, well, Noel will be the perfect dad for a dog. However, I'm in surgery for 10, 12 hours a day. Who's going to take that dog for a pee? So I think that you need to be morally responsible, and you need to have enough care capacity in your family to take on a dog for sure. And I don't think that it's a very good reflection of humanity when humanity is cruel to a dog. I think it says the worst about us. But if we're kind to a dog and a dog is kind to us, it says the best about us.
And all, when you have the successful surgeries, and those have been seen in the TV programs, and some of them are quite spectacular, what you've done, do you get as much joy from what it gives to the human who cares for the dog as to what it does for making life better for the dog again?
Well, it's a good question, because when you write a book like Dogs and Their Humans, what people really imbibe by reading that book is the journeys of the humans and how the humans were enriched. For example, there's a little boy with learning difficulties. For example, there's a man who comes back from the war in Ukraine. For example, there's a homeless guy. There's a guy who's a drug addict. All of this stuff in life is redemptive through the journeys of the dogs in this book. But for me personally, to answer your question directly, no, I don't get the same joy from the elevation of the human, because I got offered both human surgery and veterinary surgery in 1985. And I chose a veterinary surgery because I wanted to help the animals. And I believed genuinely, and this theme permeates the book, that animals are entitled to the best level of care we can give them in return for all the love they give to us. So my main joy is with Coco, the dog I've just been with in wards right now, who has had two surgeries. One was a revision surgery of a failed previous surgery, and seeing Coco up and walking this morning is my joy. Seeing the animals that I operate on the following day gaining their life and their function and their joy in living back, that is my joy.
That's a great way to finish. Noel Fitzpatrick, the book is Dogs and Their Humans. It's been great having you with us here on The Last Word. Thank you for joining us.
The Last Word on Today FM.